Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, good morning to you. Welcome in. Glad you're with us today. I'm Mark. That is Kim St. Ange, Carl Middleman. Sue Thomas has the day off. She will be back with us, I think, tomorrow. But we'll get you to work this morning. Don't you worry about that. Beautiful but chilly start to the morning. It seems like fall has arrived. No more of that fake summertime. You expecting that, Kim? 90s anymore?
I don't know. We might, I guess, get some 80s, but I think the 90s are probably gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That Dave Murray guy, we'll have to check in with him on that. But my guess is it's going to be a beautiful weekend. Hopefully you got some plans to get out. I'm going to go to the Blues game tonight with some buddies of mine.
Too.
Carl Middleman, you'll be there, won't you?
Mm-hmm.
That'll be fun. Who are they playing?
New York Islanders.
The Islanders. All right. That ought to be a good time. Get to wear my my Blues jersey and go root on the Blues tonight. And then be very tired tomorrow morning, just like Carl Middleman.
Yeah, but I won't be here, so.
And you also don't take six-hour naps when you get home, Mark.
Oh, well, I took a six-hour nap yesterday.
Did you really?
Let me clarify, it's not a nap.
That's
a full night's sleep, Carl.
Yesterday.
I'm lucky to get 6 hours at night. Often don't nap.
First time since Saturday I slept more than 3 hours at a time.
Oh, boy. Hey, we got a lot coming up for you. We're going to get to Missouri State Senator Nick Schroer in the next segment, about 7:22. We're going to talk about some DEI documents he's uncovered from the Parkway School District. And, I mean, it's head-shaking stuff that you were just wondering. If you've wondered how bad it's gotten, they've gotten a little peek behind the curtain over there, it looks to me like. We'll get to the state senator coming up here in just a couple minutes. First, though, I want to get to the shortlist.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
I've been on the wrapper as a press secretary interviewing a president. And, you know, I'm talking like four people waving their hands. Like, it's got to stop.
Yeah, it's like if you watch on the feed here for the live feed this morning on Rumble or Facebook, you'll see Carl doing this every once in a while. It's kind of what Brett Baer was getting during the end of his 12-minute interview with Kamala yesterday.
But by four people.
Yeah, by four people.
So you may not know, but you will appreciate I'm the first vice president to grow chili peppers at the vice president.
Okay. Wow,
you got to attract, I don't know, who's she going for there? Does that cross over? I think she was talking to a black audience when she joked about growing chili peppers. Somehow she thinks this is going to have mass appeal. I don't understand it.
Why, if he's as bad as you say, that half of this country is now supporting this person who could be the 47th president of the United States, why is that happening?
Yeah. Brett Baer had some good questions. Kamala Harris did not have very many good answers. She got angry, and she didn't like being talked over, but she also talked about things that made absolutely zero sense.
Now some St. Louis families are receiving monthly $500 checks again. The city's guaranteed basic income program is halted by a lawsuit, but the city says private money is now allowing them to cut checks again.
Wow, private money, Kim. I think maybe private money will be the answer to the question, how do we pay reparations to people? Not the question, how do we determine who deserves reparations? Because that's a whole different question. But where are we going to come up with the money to do it if we can't use taxpayer money?
This, by the way, this private donor is funding the program for 540 families. I'm not going to pretend to do that math, but that's a lot of money.
Well, I mean, it is, and thank goodness it's not taxpayer money, right? So it's 550 families getting $500 a month. That's $275,000, as my calculator puts it here, for to get them through the month of November. 2 months left in October, in the month of November, they would be able to resume payments for the people expecting their $500 a month.
Like, what is the city expecting out of this, okay? For a couple, months, they're going to be able to buy some groceries that are more expensive thanks to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's economy.
Yeah.
I mean, really,
well,
you're not giving them any life lessons. You're lifting them up, but only temporarily. I use the analogy of you're giving them a fish. You're not teaching them how to fish.
Call it what it is, right? If you want to claim you're trying to help people because they're struggling right now, just say you're helping them because they're struggling to pay their bills because of Bidenflation. Of course, Mayor Tashar Jones is never going to say that because it would be a glimpse of the truth about what's gone on the last 3.5 years in this country. This has nothing to do with COVID. It was simply directly income-based that people could qualify for this. Had nothing to do with how their family was affected during COVID. Nothing. And they're trying to use federal taxpayer dollars to pay off constituents that she knows will cast a vote for her the next time she runs for office. Plain and simple. A judge found that it was illegal to use taxpayer dollars for it. Now they're trying to do an end run and use private money. If you can find somebody with so much money that they're stupid enough to fund something like this, God bless you. God bless you. We know Jack Dorsey did it once. He's got more money than he knows what to do with. He can only spend so much on pot. So here you have it.
So you mentioned the reparations, right? Because they're trying to get money for that. The Reparations Commission here in the city just made its final recommendations on all these payments it wants to make. So let's just say a private donor comes through and gives all this money to that fund. Okay, so you dish out, and they want to spend $25,000, by the way, per family, I believe, or per person. I don't even know.
How many would there be?
It's an insane amount, okay? So does that then, they're thinking that's supposed to like make up for all the injustice, right? For slavery. So does that mean once they get paid that money, it's equal, like it, level playing? You can't complain anymore about what happened in the past because that's supposed to erase all of it?
The only way, I mean, first of all, I'm not in favor of reparations. The only possible common sense way that any of that would ever make sense, and this is nothing that the recipients of it would ever agree to, is to say, okay, a private donor has given us this money. Here's what's going to happen. We're going to set up an individual retirement account for each of you. This money will be deposited into that individual retirement account. You cannot access it until you're 65 years old, and then you can use it to live on in retirement. Because if you give it to them now, it's going to be gone in 6 months, maybe sooner than that. And nobody will be happier than the used car dealers up here north in throughout the city and in the county. They would be the happiest because people would rush out and buy new cars or do this or do that, and the money will be gone.
And then they're going to expect
improve people's lives. Nothing. Yeah, the one-time payment thing will soon become monthly payments or yearly payments or a living wage. I mean, there's just no end to it. And that's why I was mystified yesterday when I saw how they twisted in pretzels to try to resume guaranteed basic income programs. Right? These are just tests. It's a test. And then once they get people hooked on it, they're going to say, well, now they're dependent on it. We have to keep giving them $500 a month, $5,500 a year, whatever that comes out to. Well, next year we need to increase the income level of people who qualify for it. I mean, these things never get smaller. No government program in the history of mankind has ever gotten smaller the next year. It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. And that's why there's always one truism that you can always get back to, Carl, every single time.
It's never too early to learn that the government is a greedy piglet that suckles on a taxpayer's teat until they have sore, chapped nipples.
Amen, Mr. Swanson. All right, quick break. And we'll get to Mr. Schroer, Mr. State Senator Nick Schroer, with more on what these DEI programs are really doing in our local schools. We'll be right back.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, what is one truism we've learned about DEI, Kim? It stands for didn't earn it. generally speaking. That's one thing we know about DEI. We also stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. I get so tired of hearing those terms because most people don't think that through. It's feel-good language that the left has come up with. But you know, at the end of the day, you don't want diversity in the surgery room. You want the highest trained doctor you can get. That you do. You don't want equal outcomes. You want the equal opportunity to achieve those outcomes.
No, Mark, speak for yourself. I care about their skin color.
It's silly, but it's the world we live in, and it's the truth in our school districts right now. We've got State Senator Nick Schroer on the phone this morning, and he's uncovered some stuff that is eye-popping. Nick, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, and thanks for covering this. It's very important.
Well, yeah, I mean, so tell me how this got started. What you've gotten here is some Sunshine Law request to the Parkway School District. What prompted this?
So it kind of always, it goes back to, I'd say, my first year in the Senate, which was last year. And before the Freedom Caucus was created, we kept trying to stop this by way of the budget. We had members like Denny Hoskins, myself, Senator Eigel, trying to offer different bills to prohibit the use of our tax dollars in our public education institutions, our local schools, our government schools. And we had Republicans standing in the way saying, no, that stuff's not happening here. Well, then we tried it again this year after the Freedom Caucus was created. Still, same thing happened. And then a whole bunch of whistleblowers kept coming out saying, no, actually, it is happening. And here's some emails. Here's some discussions that were getting from the principals on down. And one in particular, there was a whistleblower from Parkway that came in and was telling us how divisive the school is and how they're excluding certain races, certain ethnicities, and they're utilizing tax dollars to create these divisive and insane programs that are excluding certain members, certain kids. And we sent out a sunshine request, and they drug their feet. We threw the hammer down and uncovered some documents.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, imagine for a moment a school district creating a safe space where only white people were allowed in. I mean, yep. Isn't that basically what you found the opposite of that, right?
Yeah, and guess what? That happened. That happened back during Jim Crow. And guess who was responsible back then? The Democrats. And they're doing it again. And we said, as a society, never again, never again are we going to allow our tax dollars in supervising our kids to inject this insane rhetoric and segregating us. And it's happening in our public schools here in the city or in St. Louis County.
What was that example you found? I mean, you sent me a copy of one of these emails that you uncovered that's basically encouraging people to come to a DEI study lounge, correct?
Yeah, it's a study lounge that's excluding basically everyone except for white kids. Yeah. Or the opposite. It says that if you're black, Asian, Hispanic, Indian, Pacific Islander, you can come to the study lounge. And it's basically saying if you're not white, you can come. But if you're white, no whites need apply. No Irish need apply. Look, you know, looking back at history, this has happened before. And if we don't stand up and say, look, you can do it if you want to have a private school that's DEI. No one's going to go to it. It's going to be a failure, but not in our government schools, not by way of our tax dollars. Are we going to be supporting racism once again? And that's exactly what it is.
I know you told Andrew Bailey about this, so I take it he'll be investigating. But to your knowledge, is this still a thing there in the Parkway School District where they're offering this study lounge?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, they initially said, no, this isn't happening. We don't have any proof of this. We had to tweak our sunshine request, and that's what we're going to be doing in most of these school districts. That's kind of why we brought in Andrew Bailey, to see if we can cast a wider net to make sure that we're utilizing the right language. And I know DESE, the Department of Education, Secondary Education, or Elementary and Secondary Education, they did a similar request a couple years ago on critical race theory. Well, because of their wording, because they didn't know how to ask it, they came back with only one or two schools saying, yeah, we're utilizing critical race theory in our schools. Look, this stuff is happening. We've had many different whistleblowers coming forward, and I think this is just the tip of the iceberg, not only in Parkway, but in our public education system around the state.
Yeah, to answer Kim's question, the email you sent me is dated September 3rd, 2024.
Yeah.
So this was a month ago that this email was sent out about a DEI safe space that also promises that if you show up here because you need a safe space to study, we'll also provide transportation to get you home.
Mm-hmm.
after school.
If you live in the city.
Yeah, if you live in the city, we'll arrange for transportation for you. I mean, come on. So, Nick, what I guess at the end of the day, we know this is happening. Why can't the legislature tell the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, no, you're not allowed to do things like this. It's discriminatory. Are they hiding behind federal law? What are they doing here?
I don't know what the problem is. And I think that the biggest issue is that we've got a lot of legislators that can't think for themselves, a lot of legislators that don't have a spine. And last night I reached out after we uncovered this, and we're still going through the hordes of documents that that were given to us. But I reached out to Cindy O'Loughlin, and she's going to be the one responsible for basically leading the Senate next year. She just had dinner with a former senator who's now the new head of DESE. And she's promised. She goes, look, if they don't fix this stuff, we're going to be fixing it next year. So we're going to hold her feet to the fire and make sure that the education committee next year, whoever's on it, whoever's going to lead it, is going to spearhead these efforts. And if not, we're going to have another fight on the floor.
Boy,
come budget time.
I hope so, my friend, because that doesn't inspire confidence in me. The names right. O'Loughlin and Rowden got exactly zero accomplished last year.
Yeah, and that's where the Freedom Caucus is going to continue growing. We're going to add numbers. We've got people like Brad Hudson, Adam Schnelting coming in, and it's going to be a very eventful session next year because we've got the illegal immigration issue we're dealing with. We've got this stuff in our public schools, and we're being lied to. We're being gaslit time and time again by the lobbyists and by the superintendent. So the time for holding hands and singing Kumbaya is over, my friend.
Yep. I think good to hear, too. Nick, thanks for working on this and letting us know about it. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for covering it. Y'all have a great week.
You bet. State Senator Nick Schroer. That's eye-opening. If you live in Parkway, you got some questions you need to ask, I think, at the next school board meeting. Coming up, we'll talk to David Stokes. He is with Show Me Institute. We're going to talk more about the minimum wage proposition that's on the ballot for you in about 2.5 weeks. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. You know, there's so many things that are on the ballot this year. We've talked about a lot of them here, and you need to understand that one of the big ones that's coming up is Proposition A. That is this effort to force through a $15 minimum wage, but it's actually worse than it sounds because not only would it falsely inflate the wage floor, it would just keep going up. And that's kind of the way this thing is worded. We've got David Stokes on the phone right now, Director of Municipal Policy over at Show Me. David, welcome back. How are you?
Mark, I'm doing great. Great to be in the air with you and everyone.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you. You know, this minimum wage thing, I've got it on my voter guide here. Of course, I'm a no on it. But, you know, this is the reason why when you go to McDonald's or you go to a coffee shop, you got machines making your food these days because people are pricing themselves out of the job market with these wages.
Absolutely. And I don't know anybody who likes that whole kiosk system at McDonald's. You got to go to McDonald's to order your own food, and it takes forever. But right, it's sort of this circle we're in where we're raising these minimum wage. We're not allowing the market to raise the minimum wage. That's fine when that happens. That's wonderful when wages go up for workers naturally. But when you artificially do it and then businesses respond as so predictably to start automation or cutting workers' hours or laying workers off, many of the things that they do, you get exactly what you just described. You go to McDonald's and you got to interact with a machine, and it's not an enjoyable experience. So then people are going to start eating out less and eating at home more, which is going to result in even fewer jobs in that industry. It's that circle we talk about.
I couldn't agree more, and we've watched what's happened in other states when something like this passed. What do you think the likelihood is that it's passed here?
Well, it's passed previously in Missouri when it's gone to the voters. So you know, past is no guarantee of the future. Of course, it's like a financial advisor commercial. But right, it's passed in the past, and that's why my colleague at Show Me Institute, Elias Sapelis, just released a new paper on this question, on Proposition A, the minimum wage in Missouri. And it really talks in a lot of detail about how the evidence is strong that minimum wage increases don't help the people they're intended to help. They do help some low-wage workers, but they don't help minimum wage families. And what's the difference? Well, there's plenty of low-wage workers who are just teenagers from middle-class or upper-middle-class families working part-time. So, sure, some of them get a raise with it, but then you cut the hours, you cut the employment opportunities for the lower-skilled workers who need these jobs the most. So you hurt the people you're ostensibly claiming to help if you assume goodwill on the back of these proponents. I don't always do that, but I will in this case. So that's what Elias talks about in depth, about all the studies that show all these things. And I really hope people check out this paper at showmeinstitute.org.
Yeah, David Stokes with us from the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org, the website there. You can go and read up more on that. I beg people to educate themselves on these issues. It's just so important. The other thing that's kind of hidden in here that people don't understand is if they pass this, they don't ever have to pass another one because it's got a cost of a consumer price index that begins in 2027 that would automatically adjust it up after that, correct? I mean, it's never going to go back down. It's only going to go up.
That's true. And that's in there as well as an aspect of it that now requires businesses. It exempts government and a few others. But businesses will now be required by law to set an amount of every 30 hours work, somebody gets 1 hour of paid leave. And the idea that the government should be interfering and mandating these types of policies is why we do need some type of initiative petition reform. I mean, yeah. It's crazy that people can just interfere in business and government through the petition process like this. And that's another aspect of it. And that's just going to... They're going to probably come back in 5 years and make that an even larger deal if this passes and require more time off. There's nothing wrong with paid time off, but it's something that businesses and their workers should negotiate with themselves. And in the tight labor market that we're in, trust me, workers have plenty of power. This not only will this be harmful, this whole minimum wage increase and the like, but it's so unnecessary right now as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm trying to think back, and I know I'm the oldest one in the room here, but I think my first job, which was at an amusement park where it was seasonal, so they didn't have to stick to whatever the minimum wage was at the time, which I think was $2.25 or $2.50 or something. I think I made $1.80 or something, seasonal wage at an amusement park when I was 14 or 15 years old back in Ohio. And, you know, I didn't plan to do that for my whole life. I was doing it for some extra spending money. It was never designed to support a family of four on minimum wage. The point is, if you go and improve your skill set, you can demand more money. That was the point of this all along, right?
Absolutely. I mean, what you just described is so perfect in that it's giving young people an opportunity to get some work experience, to increase their skill set. And if you were, let's say you were working full-time at that, I know it was seasonal, but let's say it was full-time, if you showed up regularly and did a good job, there's no way you'd stay at minimum wage for a long time. Like, people who work minimum wage jobs and do it regularly and do it well, they get promoted quickly. They get pay raises quickly because the companies that have them want to keep them. So when you deny them these opportunities in the first place by passing these wages, which lead to these wage increases, which lead to more automation, as we started off the show with, you're denying people who need these opportunities the most. You're limiting these opportunities for them. And that's really why this is so harmful. And again, it comes back to, will some low income workers benefit? Sure. But a lot of those people are going to be teenagers of upper middle class families.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet at the same time, you're hurting the people who need these lower wage opportunities the most and who can use that to build greater opportunities in the future.
Well, I hope people download the voter guide. They can look at mine. They can go read the paper at showmeinstitute.org and find out more about Proposition A. There are also a bunch of amendments on there, including Prop 3 and Amendment 3 and all that stuff, which we're obviously a no on as well. But people can read those on my voter guide. Well, I've got you on here, David. I did want to bring this up. I got this thing in the mail the other day from Missouri American Water talking about some public hearings that are coming up. And the reason it caught my attention is there's going to be one here in the St. Louis area over at UMSL, it looks like, coming up on November 12th, where they're going to be going to the state and asking for a 30 5% hike in the fees they're charging you for your water. And my guess is most people get these things and throw them in the garbage.
They probably do. You're certainly right about that. So I don't know exactly what Missouri American is asking for in that, and no doubt that may seem high to the average person. But, you know, our private utilities in Missouri are very heavily regulated, and they're monopolies, so they should be. I'd like to see in a few opportunities for more consumer choice were available, but that doesn't apply across the board. So as regulated businesses, as regulated monopolies, they need to be carefully regulated by the State Public Service Commission. So you have this costly and detailed process where then when they can't just raise prices on their consumers. They have to go through, again, a long-term process here. And the State Public Service Commission will judge whether these requests are worthy or not, or if there's some compromise maybe in the middle. And I think that happens frequently. But as much as that sounds high, trust me when I say that the alternative is also bad. We saw the alternative for years with the City Water Division, which is a publicly owned utility owned by the City of St. Louis, where for political purposes, they didn't want to raise rates because in those cases, your customers are also your voters.
That's right.
Ultimately who has to decide. So then you underinvest in the system and you really harm your system. And we saw that with the City Water Division. And that doesn't mean that these increases by the utilities, the private utilities are always good, but that is the role of the State Public Service Commission to help make that decision. And I don't want to automatically say that that price increase by Missouri American is too much. I don't know. I do trust that the Public Service Commission process will work itself out. And it is a good process. As complex as it may be, and yes, most people have no desire to get involved in it and show up to these meetings, which is unfortunate because you as a customer have every right to do so.
It's a good point. David Stokes, always great having you on. ShowMe.org. ShowMeInstitute.org. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Mark, always great talking with you. Thanks for having me on this morning, sir.
Yes, sir. We'll talk again soon. By the way, here you go. For the average Missouri American water customer, if you use an average of 5,400 gallons of water a month, your bill would increase by $18. And the change to wastewater customers for them, some customers could see up to a $27 increase in their bill. A 34% overall water and wastewater increase. So if you want to go to one of these Missouri Public Service Commission meetings, just so you know, there are a couple online, a couple of virtual hearings that are going to happen. One coming up in November 6th, the day after Election Day. And then the one that's going to be over at UMSL, which is the other closest one to us, is November 12th at 6 p.m. over at the Student Center there at UMSL. I don't even know if people show up to these. But somebody needs to ask, why do you need a 34% increase in my water bill? This is the only place you have to contest that, is at that meeting. All right, coming up. Kim, what are we whimming about today?
I don't know about all you, but I've been seeing a lot of those political yard signs. And maybe you've driven by and wondered, are those really effective? Could they change someone's mind? Well, I found an interesting study that answers that question.
Good. We'll get to that coming up.
Kim on a whim.
Kim on a Whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
If you have a political yard sign at home, or maybe your neighbor does, or you just pass them on your way, you know, doing whatever you do during the day, have you ever wondered how effective are those? Is someone going to change their mind?
I have, because my neighborhood doesn't allow them. It's
in
the covenants.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so odd.
So I just put one in my window.
And how's that going over?
I'm flying a Trump flag.
Have you had any complaints?
Maybe, but I don't care. There's nothing they can do about it.
That's such a Mark Cox answer.
I'm sorry. Number one, it's stupid that you can't have a yard sign.
Agreed.
To begin with. But I didn't write the covenants, and the subdivision's been there for 20 years, so there's nothing you can do about it. But still, I do think they're effective, because it should make people think when they see a yard sign. Whether they agree or disagree with the issue, you need to educate yourself on it, right?
I agree. There was a 2015 study. It was some political science professor at Columbia University that found that they can make a slight difference. He estimated somewhere between 1 and 2 percentage points on average. So is this going to be the comeback kid who's going to come up from behind because of your signs? No. But in a tight race, this could make the difference. And a lot of it, as you might imagine, is name recognition. In fact, they did what's called the Ben Griffin experiment, where what they did is this professor at Vanderbilt in 2011, she created yard signs for a fake county council candidate named Ben Griffin, put them all over the area, including a traffic street near a school. Survey mailed out a few days later by the school's Parent Teacher Association asking people to list their top choices for the county's at-large council seats. Well, what happened was there were five real candidates who were listed along with that fake Ben Griffin candidate. Nearly a quarter of the people who responded listed the fake Ben Griffin candidate among their top three picks. Name recognition, people apparently aren't even taking the time to Google the person and see, you know, what they stand for. They just, I recognize that name. They must be trustworthy. They must somehow these they think the, they are in agreement these, with their these stance are the, on
excuse
issues.
Excuse me, but these are the same idiots, for lack of a better term, because it is about the most descriptive term I can think of, who vote for the first name on the ballot.
Yep.
Like, statistics show, if your name is the first one on the ballot, if you win the lottery and your name is the first one on the ballot, you get maybe an 8 to 10 point bump from having your name on the ballot there.
Mm-hmm.
First.
I remember
some people just check that one and just move on.
Remember Valentina Gomez was running for, I believe, Secretary of State?
Yes.
And she was really excited that her name was going to be first. Now, obviously, she didn't even come close to winning that.
But in a close race,
that
can make a difference.
She may have gotten more votes than she otherwise would have. They also say that the simpler the message, the better. So just having the name and what office they're running for versus some of these signs try to list the different things that they stand for. And while that's great, if you're driving by quickly, you don't have time to read that.
Yes,
and
correct.
Sometimes I'm actually frustrated that I wasn't able to read it. I'm almost irritated at the sign for making it too small or whatever the case may be, that it didn't give me time to actually take a look at what it says.
Well, I mean, I noticed the no on three signs up and down 44 as I drove to Arkansas last weekend.
It's in my yard, too. Put your sign out. Go get one.
I hope it makes some sort of impact on all those people. Hopefully there's some out on I-72. I don't know. Coming up, Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday, with her take on the Bret Baier, Kamala Harris interview. We'll be back.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it, and we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.